Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives. And check us out on Instagram, instagram.com/greatdetectives. If you're enjoying the podcast, please follow us using your favorite podcast software. And as you're making your travel plans, remember JohnnyDollarAir.com. JohnnyDollarAir.com is a Priceline affiliate link. So part of your purchase price supports the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio at no additional cost to you. So remember, when making your travel plans, check JohnnyDollarAir.com first. Well, now it is time for this week's episode of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. The original air date, January 6, 1957, and the title is The Ellen Deer Matter.
From Hollywood, it's time now for... Johnny Dollar.
Pat McCracken, Johnny, Universal Adjustment.
Oh, hi, Pat. What's on your mind?
Lovely, beautiful Ellen Deer.
On the strength of that description, I'll take her.
And she's loaded. $325,000 worth of jewelry.
Hey, that girl needs a bodyguard, sweet.
Yeah, Johnny, needs a guard of some kind. Only she isn't a girl. She's a boat.
I've just lost my enthusiasm. What's the matter with the old tub?
That's what I want you to find out, Johnny.
That last crack suddenly got me interested again. Okay, Pat, I'll be right over.
Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Western Maritime and Property Insurance Company, Los Angeles, California. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Ellen Deer matter. Expense account item 190 cents, taxi from my apartment to the offices of Universal Adjustment Bureau in Hartford. Fred McCracken's usual smile was noticeably missing when I walked in on him.
Come in, Johnny, and sit down.
Thanks.
Oh, and you're to bill Western Maritime and Property on this one instead of us.
Okay, but how are you involved?
We handle all their claims that are of any size. Sorry, you ever hear of Randolph Berman?
I know of a jeweler down in New York.
That's the one. And if you know him, Johnny, you've been putting too much gravy in your expense account.
I said no of him.
Hmm.
Didn't he bring in the Star of Cape Town and the Kamandu Emerald?
That's right. Everybody seems to think he's a crook, and yet somehow he manages to handle some of the finest jewels in the world.
How could an honest man afford it?
Yeah. This time it's the Bettenhaus collection. It's out of Hungary.
Oh, yeah, I read about that. Only I thought somebody down in Mexico owned it.
Yeah, a fellow named Rigo Mariani, down in Guadalajara. He's the one who sold it to Randolph Berman.
Okay, now. Is this Ellen Deer you mentioned Berman's wife?
No. Former wife. He's in about his fifth. All beautiful, dumb dolls. But more important, it's the name of his 72-foot motor cruiser. Mm-hmm. And the Bermans have been traveling around in it, down the coast, through the canal, along the coast of Central America, and so on. Anyhow, when he got word that the Bettenhaus collection could be had, he wasted no time in getting to Guadalajara.
And that's where Western Maritime and Property comes in.
Right. They had already written a policy on the boat for $52,000. Their main office in Los Angeles was close at hand, so he had them write the policy on the jewel.
Is that where Berman is now, in Los Angeles?
No. He's still in Mexico. Didn't want to move with those priceless rocks until he was certain of the insurance. And before Weston would write it, of course, they wanted the collection appraised.
Naturally. But who in Mexico?
Jacques Jean-Pierre, a famous gemologist, was right there in Guadalajara, you know, to look over the collection himself. Ah. So he made the appraisal. The policy has been issued. $325,000.
I still don't see anything wrong with the whole deal, Pat.
There isn't anything wrong with it yet. But in spite of Berman's standing in the profession, his reputation, it isn't everything it might be.
Yeah, come to think of it, wasn't there a killing or two involved in this acquisition of the Star of Cape Town?
There have been several things like that. He's been involved in attempts to smuggle in some valuable pieces. Oh, well. He always managed somehow to come out smelling like a rose. Legally, perfectly clean, you understand?
But you still don't trust
him. Oh, no, no. And with his planning to carry that load of stuff around in his yacht.
Yeah, see what you mean. If anything happened to those rocks or the boat, over 300 grand right out the window.
Exactly. Now, belatedly, Western is worried about it. And they'll pay good money to have you assuage their worries. You have a Mexican tourist guard?
Sure, for my last fishing trip down there.
Then I think you better go down and guard that collection until Berman gets it safely up into the States. He's considered quite the host. He'll probably be perfectly willing to have you aboard.
Now, this is the kind of assignment I like, yachting in the Blue Pacific. But surely he hasn't got his boat parked in Guadalajara. That's over 100 miles inland.
No, it's at Mazatlan. And from what I've been able to learn, it's surrounded by armed guards day and night. While he has some engine work done.
But as soon as that's finished, he'll head north to the States.
So he says. Got a branch office in Los Angeles. He'll probably deliver the collection there. I just want to be sure he gets there, Johnny.
Hmm? Okay, Pat. You can wire the boys at Weston that I'm on my way. Item 2, 191.40, plane fare and incidentals, Hartford to Mazatlan via Los Angeles. The first leg of the flight to L.A. was uneventful. Except for a good-looking young blonde from Santa Barbara, whom I promised to look up as soon as this case is... Well, that's not for the expense account. When we arrived at the Los Angeles International Airport, I learned that I'd have a three-quarter-hour wait for my plane to Mazatlan. So I grabbed a magazine, that's item 3, 35 cents, when I heard my name being called on the PA system.
Johnny Dollar, report to Pan American Airways desk.
With the thought in mind that perhaps my little friend from the plane might have decided to stay over in L.A. Her name was Rita, by the way. I lost no time in getting over to the Pan Am desk.
Mr. Dollar?
Yeah?
Johnny Dollar?
That's right.
I'm Arthur Arthur, Western Maritime and Property Insurance Company.
Oh, yeah. How do, Mr. Arthur? Planning to go on down to Mazatlan with me?
No. Meet Monsieur Jean-Pierre.
Monsieur Dollar, I am honored.
How are you, Mr. Jean-Pierre?
This is the gentleman who appraised the Bettenhouse collection for us.
Oh, yes, yes. I
so
am
that
an expert.
So they could issue the policy on it to Mr. Berman.
Oh, yes. Oh,
yes, he's done this sort of thing for us many times.
Oh, I do not
now,
have
I'm
any...
afraid that he's brought us rather bad news.
Something's already happened to the collection?
Well, not exactly. Not for the whole collection.
No, not the
well,
whole...
Please, that is, I'm not quite sure. What I mean is...
Yeah, just what do you mean, Mr. Arthur?
Perhaps I should explain to Monsieur Dollar, eh?
Well, I think somebody better.
Yes, you go ahead, John.
Yeah, very well.
And while you're doing it, I'll cancel the rest of Mr. Dollar's reservation to Mazatlan. Yes, I'll do that. Oh, Claire...
Oh, no, wait a minute. First, let me find out what this is all about.
Oui.
Very well. Jacques here was in Guadalajara when the Bettenhouse collection became available for purchase.
Uh-huh. Yes, Monsieur Dollar. I had gone there in the hope that some of the pieces might be purchased separately.
So?
Alas, such was not the case. The Mariani firm decided to dispose of the collection only as a whole.
I see. Well, what's this bad news you have?
Ah, I am getting to
yes,
that.
Yes, you see, it's this way.
Please.
Well, then go ahead, Jacques.
Thank you. Monsieur Dollar, interested as I was, I looked over the collection very carefully, each individual piece.
Oh, yeah.
And you must believe me, to an expert like myself, every facet of every gem has a character all its own. A precious stone is like a face to me, always to be remembered.
Yeah. Well, go on, please.
I simply wish to make it clear to you, monsieur, that every item in the Bettenhouse collection is completely familiar to me.
Oh, it is?
As are many other important gems throughout the world. You know, each is like a friend.
And each stone in him is like a face to
you. Precisely. Always to be remembered.
Yes.
Alors,
well,
The collection is purchased by Monsieur Randolph Berman.
Yes, Mr. Berman.
Please. He wishes to insure it in Monsieur Arthur's company.
Yeah, I know all that.
Well, Monsieur Arthur requests by telephone that I appraise it.
$325,000.
Ah, then you know.
I know.
So I stay at Guadalajara a few days to wait Monsieur Arthur's check for my service.
Yes. Want to be sure
check please. I visit some of my old friends among the jewel setters. And then, on the third day, what do you think happens?
You tell me.
Johnny, this is it. In the shop...
In the shop of my friend Garcia Hernandez, I watch him work on the mount for a beautiful diamond. And suddenly, I see that the stone is an old friend.
One from the Bettenhouse collection?
Ah, oui. The Calibre diamond that was supposedly in the possession of Monsieur Berman.
You're sure of the identity of that stone, Mr. Jean-Pierre?
Oh, please. As I told you, monsieur, a precious stone to me...
Yeah, it's like a face to you. So what you figure, Arthur, is that you've insured a boatload of $300,000 worth of gems on the way to the USA, and maybe they're not on board.
Exactly. Unless, of course...
Mr. Jean-Pierre, did you tell Mr. Berman about this one stone?
Oh, I went immediately to Mazatlan, where I knew he had his boat, the LND.
Well, what did he say?
Alas, he had sailed away.
Did you learn his destination?
Oh, yes.
Los Angeles, Johnny, right here. He has a branch office.
Well, has he had time to get here yet?
I don't think so.
Have you tried radioing to his yacht?
No, I've done nothing. You see, I didn't learn about this until Mr. Jean-Pierre arrived just a few hours ago.
Yes, I came up in the aeroplane, the better to arrive and speak with Monsieur Arthur before Monsieur Berman would arrive.
Do you know where Berman plans to dock his boat?
Well,
Probably the port in San Pedro, if he's coming here. But who can be sure? Usually on vacation trips, he docks down the coast at Balboa, the yacht club. Or, who knows, he might even...
Yeah. He might have no intention of coming up to the States at all. He might not even have the jewels with him. Arthur, do you know where his branch office is?
Oh, yes, it's in Los Angeles. Well, actually, it's in Beverly Hills.
Got a car?
Yeah.
Then let's go. Though he couldn't quite put his finger on it, Arthur was convinced that Randolph Berman was up to something and that his insurance company was going to have to take the rap. On the way into Berman's Beverly Hills office, we dropped Jean-Pierre at the Beverly Hilton and told him to sit tight in case we needed him again. Berman's office was in a nice modern building on South Beverly Drive, tastefully furnished with pictures of various famous jewels on the walls, but with nothing of particular value in evidence. However, I did notice that one wall held a built-in vault big enough for a reasonably sized bank. We were approached by a hand-rubbing, obsequious little character dressed in striped pants and cutaway coat and wearing thick glasses.
Good morning, gentlemen. Is there any way I may be of service to you?
Yeah, I think there is. Are you
Mr. Arthur, forgive me. I didn't recognize you for a moment.
Mr. Corello, this is Mr. Johnny Dollar.
Hi.
How do you do? Is there something I may show you, Mr. Dollar? Some little bauble, perhaps, for a charming lady?
Well, not at the moment, Mr. Corello.
Oh. Oh, Mr. Arthur, there's no reason to mail this to you. Let me see now. Oh, yes, here it is. Here is a request for slight revision of the policy on the Bettenhaus collection.
Oh?
What's this?
With a wire was sent by Mr. Berman just before he embarked from Mazatlan. I was going to put it into letter form to be more proper, but...
Well, now here, I'll read this. Please request Arthur revise Bettenhaus policy. Exclude Calabar Diamond. Value $4,000, which I have sold private party in Guadalajara. Oh, well, we kind of guessed wrong, didn't we, Johnny?
Mr. Corello.
Yes.
Has Mr. Berman wired you whether he's coming here?
Oh, of course he is, with that collection.
When? When is he going to arrive?
Well, his lovely yacht, the Elendia, should reach San Pedro Harbor late tonight. But that's what he wired me, and I intend to meet him there.
Then I'm sure you won't mind if I go with you.
Oh?
Mr. Dollar is a special investigator.
Investigator?
Well, actually, I'm here just to help Mr. Berman protect that collection.
Oh, excellent. Then you can arrange for the police escort. Yes, and alert the harbor police to guard the Elendia, as Mr. Berman requested.
Did he request that?
Oh, indeed.
But apparently he hasn't been worried about anything happening to the collection while he's at sea.
At sea? Oh, surely you don't mean pirates or anything like that in this modern day and age.
You know something? At this point, I'm not quite sure what I mean, or even why I'm here. Well, of course what, Arthur?
Oh, excuse me while I answer that.
Well, I mean...
Berman jewels.
That is...
What?
Well, at least I'll feel better when the stuff is here in the vault.
Wait a minute.
Oh, no.
Corello at the phone paled visibly, then gasped and clutched the back of a chair for support as he listened on the phone. His jaw dropped, his eyes widened, and he shook his head once or twice in horrified disbelief. Finally, slowly, he hung up and came unsteadily toward us.
Mr. Corello.
Yeah, what is it, Mr. Corello?
The Coast Guard.
Yes?
They said the Elendil, the yacht.
Yes?
Sunk.
What?
In 600 feet of water. In the outer channel.
Act two of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, in just a moment. Democracy. What has it to do with money, the medium of exchange of mankind? A couple of thousand years ago, it was said that money alone sets the world in motion.
That's one way of saying that money and economy are virtually one and the same thing. The economy of a nation depends on its commerce. Commerce depends on manufacturing and services. It has been proven that those nations which practice democracy have the greatest economics. That means money. More money for more people. And a greater freedom of opportunity to earn a higher standard of living. That's why democracy provides mankind with its richest legacy of freedom. Now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Ellen Dear Matter.
Expense account item 4, $7 even for a fast taxi ride to Coast Guard headquarters in San Pedro, which is really the port of Los Angeles. By dint of elbowing my way in, I got directly to Captain Barney Thorson.
Afraid you got only half the story, Mr. Dollar.
All I know, Captain, is that the Ellen Dear went down in some 600 feet of water in the outer channel. Total loss.
That's correct. However, what you don't know is that the passengers, Mr. and Mrs. Berman, and the crew were picked up and brought in here.
Oh?
Outside of a little soaking and a little scare, they were perfectly all right. You see, the Ellen Dear had apparently had some engine trouble before she left Mazatlan.
Yes, so I understand.
Mexican authorities, with whom we fully cooperate, notified us we'd better keep an eye out for her. So when she reached the channel, we weren't surprised to get a radio call from her asking us to stand by that Universal joint was kicking up.
Is that what happened?
By the time one of our cutters got within hailing distance, she was on the way down. That propeller shaft had whipped loose, torn through the hull, and the Ellen Dear was sinking fast. Ask me, that boat was overpowered, Dolly.
How do you mean?
Well, it must have been, because sheer torque tore the whole engine loose from its mountings. And it plowed through the bottom along with everything else on board that was heavy. There was a big safe, for instance, anchored amidships.
There was a what?
A safe. A safe, you know, a small, heavy steel vault.
Yeah, I know. That went down, too?
With the engine. It was all our boys could do to keep the owner from diving over after it. It was crying like a baby. You'd think he'd had the crown jewels in it.
Maybe you're not too wrong at that.
What?
Not the crown jewels, perhaps, but a collection worth something over 300 grand. And what about salvage?
Salvage operations in 600 feet of water in that channel?
Oh, yeah.
No, Dolly. Salvage, even if it were possible, would cost a couple of times the worth of that stuff, at least.
The only passengers were the Bermans, huh?
That's right. Crew three.
And they weren't able to save anything?
Nothing. Not of any consequence, that is. One of the crew didn't even have his shoes and shirt on.
What about Berman and his wife?
It's funny what people do in an emergency sometimes.
What do you mean?
Well, you've heard about the man whose house catches fire. He gets panicky, throws all the china and the glassware out the window, and carries out the mattress.
What are you getting at, Captain?
The only thing that Berman saved in his excitement was two beat-up old hats and a fishing rod.
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean.
And all his wife brought along was a handful of nylon stockings. She was hanging on to him for dear life. Oh, yeah, a big hat box with an evening dress half hanging out of it.
And that's all?
That's all. Hey, you know, that Mrs. Berman's quite a dish. Not too bright, but a real looker.
Where are they now, Captain?
They're headed for Beverly Hills. Beverly Wilshire was the hotel, I think. In any event, Dollar, I'm afraid your company is going to have a big, fat claim to pay.
On the yacht, yes.
What's that mean?
What do you think? Item 5, 320, long distance call to the police in Mazatlan. I wanted to be sure that the Bettenhaus collection had been on board the Ellen Dear when she left port down there. Inspector Romulo assured me it had, that he'd checked the safe on the boat himself before allowing it to sail. Furthermore, he had insisted his own maritime service keep tabs on it up to the point where it made contact with the U.S. Coast Guard. In other words, the loot couldn't very well have been passed to someone else at sea. Item 6, 580 cab fare to Beverly Hills, where I dropped in at Berman's office.
No, Mr. Dollar. He and Mrs. Berman are at the Beverly Wilshire. I'm sure you understand it's been necessary for them to buy a lot of clothes and things.
Yeah, but he will come here.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. From his last phone call, I'd say he'll be here within the hour.
All right, then I'll come back. Please ask him to stick around and wait for me if he doesn't mind.
Of course, Mr. Dollar. I shall be glad to. Oh, incidentally, he has had me phone Mr. Arthur and ask that claim forms for both the Bettenhaus collection and the loss of the cruiser be brought here to the office just as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I'd figured as much. Berman wasn't wasting any time. Oh, I know there still wasn't any concrete evidence that Berman was trying to pull a fast one. Ostensibly, the only reason for my trip out here was to watch over that fabulous jewel collection. A lot of good I'd been. He'd lost the collection and his boats, and the company'd have to pay. Then a wild idea hit me. I suddenly remembered something that had happened months ago. Last July, to be exact, when a big passenger liner, the Andrea Doria, had sunk off the Atlantic coast. According to the papers, when the survivors were brought into the port, the usual customs inspection was waived. And it occurred to me at the time that every one of those people could have easily smuggled in anything he could carry or conceal in his clothing. I'm not saying it did happen. I'm sure it didn't. But it could have. And if such an idea occurred to me, why not to a man like Berman, who was already pretty well known for his tricks to evade customs? Item 6, 20 cents, phone call to the Coast Guard and Captain Thorson.
Thorson speaking.
Johnny Dollar, Captain, answer me just one question, will you?
Sure, what?
When you brought them in, were the Bermans required to pass through customs?
Well, no, of course not. There'd hardly be any reason to...
Thank you very much. Item 7, 10 cents, another call. This time to Arthur Arthur at Western Maritime and Property Insurance.
You caught me in the nick of time, Johnny. I was just walking out the door.
On your way to Berman's office?
Why, yes.
With a handful of claims forms?
Yes.
Now listen, get there as fast as you can. Get there ahead of him.
What?
So that you can see if he brings anything into the office, like the Bettenhaus collection.
What?
Though I doubt if he'd be that foolish.
Foolish or not, how could he, Johnny? That collection, unfortunately, is at the bottom of the ocean.
Listen to me. Keep him there. Maybe on the pretext of having to wait for me. Any reason you can think of.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
Just hold him until I get there, understand?
Very well, Johnny. But what are you going to do?
Arthur, I may have to break in and rob a hotel room. I went out and stationed myself across the street from the Beverly Wilshire. 5 minutes later, I saw Randolph Berman walk out the front door and head east on Wilshire Boulevard in the direction of his office on Beverly Drive. I waited a few minutes to make sure he didn't turn back, then entered the hotel. At the desk, I learned the number of Berman's suite on the 9th floor. Break in? It would have taken a battering ram. So I tried knocking.
All right. You don't have to bust down the door. What's the matter? You forget your key and... No. Get out of here, buddy. Randy said not to let anybody in. He's out buying us clothes.
Oh, he'd tell you to let me in, baby.
Hey, who are you?
Randy sent me up here from Guadalajara.
Oh, well, then come in. Oh, you are in.
Yeah.
Well, have a drink, then.
No, thanks.
A girl's entitled to a couple of drinks after that dousing in the ocean, and you might as well... What about Hernandez?
Your husband sold him the wrong stone from that collection.
Sold? Oh, he gave it to him.
Oh, then you knew about it.
Oh, sure. So he could make a legit-looking change in the insurance and convince everybody he was on the up and... You sure you're from Hernandez?
You kidding? How else would I know about the whole deal?
I don't know. Hey, Randy said not to let anybody in here or he'd kill me. Dumb blonde, he called me.
You? A smart, beautiful girl like you?
Oh, hey, you're okay. My name's Vi. Come on, let's have a drink.
No, thanks. Listen, Vi. I've got to get the right stone from that collection, the caliber diamond. Then I'll leave this one I've got in my pocket here.
Which one you got? Let me see it.
Oh, no. Only Mr. Berman. And only when he gives me the caliber.
Well, which one you got there, huh?
Well, never mind. I'll show it to Mr. Berman.
I just want to see it.
Not until I get the caliber from the collection. So, if he isn't here, if he's taking it to the office, I'll just...
You think he's crazy? Let everybody know he... Let me see the one you have, huh?
Look, I just told you. Anyway, how do I know I can trust you? I didn't even see you in Guadalajara.
Oh, now you sound like Randy. Dumb blonde, he said. Keep the door locked. But I let the bellboy in with the drinks, and I let you in, didn't I? Now, let me see the one you got. Will you, if I get you the other one?
From the hat box that didn't have to go through customs?
How did you know? Hey, you're cutie. I bet you read about the Andrew Dorsier, just like Randy did. Well, now let's talk.
Where is the hat box, Vi?
Now, wait a minute. Maybe I am dumb. Who did you say you are?
Where's the hat box?
No. No, I won't tell you. You get out of here.
Now, without the collection, boy.
No, you can't. Randy would kill me. He'd kill me if he even knew I let you in here. Who are you?
Johnny Dollar, insurance investigator.
Oh, please, Johnny, get out of here.
The stuff in the bedroom?
You can't go in there. I mean it. He'd kill me.
Sorry, but that's your worry.
Oh, no. Stop it, or I'll set your eyes out.
Hey,
now, you can't.
Pull in those claws, baby.
No, you.
Well, I hate to do this, but.
No, no, help!
Yeah, that's right, that's right. Get the manager up here. Get the police up here.
Police? Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Then you'd really be in trouble. You'd be better off if Berman tried to kill you. Now, where's the stuff?
It's in the closet, on the floor, in the hat box.
Thanks. Well, well. Just a handful, but worth a fortune. Well. Oh, now wait a minute, girl. Put down that bottle.
I gotta stop you. He'd kill me, don't you understand? Just for letting you in here. You don't know him.
Look, baby, you're in this thing deep enough as it is. Don't try to make it any worse for yourself.
But when he finds out that I... Listen.
He's come back.
And I open up. And my hands full.
What'll I do? Where'll I go?
Right here, behind this closet door. Quick.
Ah!
Johnny,
just stay there. Hang on to that bottle and think over what I told you about getting in deeper.
Hi, where'd you get these drinks? You got somebody in here. Bellboy? Hi, you half-witted bird brain. I told you. Who are you?
The name is Dollar, Mr. Berman.
Insurance Dick?
I just dropped by to pick up the Bettenhaus collection.
Put it down, Dollar. I'm a good shot with this thing.
Yeah. And it wouldn't be the first time you killed over a handful of jewelry, would it?
That's right. Won't be the last. But you'll never know about it. Now, where's Vi?
How should I know?
She let you in here? I'll murder that dizzy blonde.
That dizzy blonde is a lot smarter than you think.
Where is she? What do you mean?
By helping me, she has a chance of getting out of this mess you've involved her in. Of getting out clean.
That dirty two-timing... Dollar, I'm going to kill you.
You'd even like to involve her in that, too, wouldn't you?
Thanks for the idea. I'll make it look like she killed you.
Oh, no, you...
Nice work with that bottle, Vi. But he missed you.
Please, you won't let him...
No, no, don't worry, baby. He won't bother anybody. Not for a long, long time. Item 8, $245 even. Incidentals during a couple of days of relaxation under the California sun and transportation back to Hartford. Expense account total, $453.95. Remarks, by way of getting off as easily as possible, Vi sang like a canary and incidentally cleared up a couple of other of his shady deals. Result, by the time his prison term runs out, he'll be too long dead to collect the insurance on his yacht. End of remarks, end of report. Yours truly... Johnny Dollar.
Now, here is our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, the DeSalle matter. And I promise you a double-barrel thrill in it. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood. It is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone, who also wrote tonight's story. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Lawrence Dobkin, Howard McNear, Jay Novello, Jack Edwards, Barney Phillips, and Raymond Burr. Musical supervision is by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Dan Coverly speaking.
Johnny Dollar has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Welcome back. A good overall plot, and it's interesting to have a tie-in back to the Star of Cape Town. Matter of five-parter. The Andrea Doria was actually a real-life tragedy that, as the episode indicated, occurred in the summer of 1956, leading to the death of 46 passengers. So it was a tragedy the audience would have been aware of. And as often as the case with writers, you can get inspiration from anything. If you're curious, there's a website that was set up by one of the survivors of the sinking at AndreaDoria.org. He passed away in 2004, but the website has been preserved exactly as it was. So in addition to being a chance to learn history, it's also a chance to see a turn-of-the-century website in the wild. This story is also interesting because there is actually another version that most of the same cast got together to record. It is listed on various websites as an audition. As John Abbott explained in the Who is Johnny Dollar matter, many thought that this was an audition for Bob Bailey to continue as Johnny Dollar, which would have been weird. However, the late Stuart Wright located the script for the audition and discovered it was not an audition for a lead actor, but for sponsors. And essentially, the actors came in and re-performed the script for Union Scale, but the announcer went ahead and did six different commercials for various companies at different junctures in the story. Now, whether this was a situation where they were auditioning multiple lead sponsors or they were testing out the later format for ads that you would hear on not only Johnny Dollar but other CBS programs, such as Suspense and Gunsmoke, where you would have four or five ad breaks in the program. I don't know. In terms of the story itself for this audition version, the only change appears to be that John Daner took the part that was played by Raymond Burr in the broadcast version, which makes sense as even though they had different voices, they were often cast for similar roles. The opening is slightly different as well. The part of the script Mr. Abbott reprinted in his book offers a potential answer to a question in the broadcast version because there's a point where the recording cuts out. Pat said he wanted Johnny to look into it for his company, and Johnny said, "That last crack suddenly got me interested again." And it was clear that there was a little bit of the exchange missing. Now, we can't 100% for sure say what was in the broadcast version, but Mr. Abbott reprinted the portion of the audition script, which again had slightly different lines in some cases. And Pat McCracken said that after stating that he wanted Johnny to look into it, he said, "For a slight consideration, of course." Now, as I said, the wording of the opening lines are slightly different, so we don't know if this was what Pat said on air. But at least in the audition, as the former director of The Man Called X, and now the writer of Johnny Dollar, Jack Johnstone ripped off Pagan Zeltzman. And of course, as writer-director for the piece, Johnstone made $175 for the audition, so he did it for a slight consideration, of course. This audition recording is listed among the lost episodes of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Though honestly, it's one of the ones I'd be least enthused about being found, just because it's the same story we have, but just with ads. Though I definitely play it, I'd much rather that we get one of the ones where we don't have any version of it, or one of the ones like the stories where both Lund and O'Brien did the same script and we only have one version. It's kind of fun to be able to compare those. All right, listener comments and feedback, and we received a lot of feedback on the Rasmussen matter. And we go ahead and we start off with the emails. And this one comes from Jay. Jay writes, Dear Adam, I really enjoyed the Rasmussen matter, though there wasn't much of a mystery. I was struck by Roy Glenn's performance as Stauffer. It's rare to hear a recognizably black voice on old-time radio detective shows, apart from the occasional bit characters on Tales of the Texas Rangers. I was happy to read he also appeared on Rocky Jordan's, one of my favorites. I was also happy to hear the announcer's reference to Edward R. Murrow's Have You No Decency, Sir game. I had to look up Sour Mash. Another bonus, thanks for everything. Well, thanks so much. Appreciate your comment. And you're definitely right about the rarity of hearing black voices in these episodes. And actually, I think that more often than not, it does tend to be Roy Glenn. Because he not only did Rocky Jordan, and did, I think, an episode or two of Tales of the Texas Rangers and several Johnny Dollars. He also did some Broadway Is My Beat. Glenn was a very talented character actor, probably best known for his work in the supporting cast of Amos and Andy in a variety of roles on both radio and television, but really able to be quite versatile. He was actually in an episode of Video Theater a couple months back on Sheriff of Cochise. And then Russ emails in, Adam, I recently listened to the Yours Truly Johnny Dollar episode, The Rasmussen Matter, and found myself in tears. Having lost my dad last year, the episode stirred up memories of my father and I reconciling our differences during the last months of his life. It was very moving. And then Derek writes, not to get too emotional here, but by the time the episode ended, my eyes were already tearing up. The way the father approached the unworthy daughter-in-law reminded me of how God approaches us. He will forgive our past if only we'll give him the chance. Wow, thank you for your channel. And Emmett writes, absolutely one of the best dramas of the old-time radio era. The script takes full advantage of Virginia Gregg's and Bob Bailey's talent. It's one I'll keep for introducing French to the treasures to be found in radio's classic days. And Sarah writes, this has to be my favorite episode so far. I loved how Johnny didn't want to break the old man's heart while being cynical and justifiably so, but then managed to show us compassion and ends up healing two hearts in the process. I've only recently discovered your podcast and I'm really enjoying from Queensland, Australia. Well, thank you so much, Sarah. And then we go to Instagram where Jen writes, wow, this episode wasn't the best for my morning commute. I had to reach for the Kleenex as I teared up at the first meeting of Mr. Rasmussen and Laura. The story was incredibly moving and the voice acting was superb. As you pointed out, the Rasmussen household exuded warmth, tenderness, love, and respect. And even the character Fred, who wasn't even alive, left a lasting impression. This is my new favorite episode of Johnny Dollar, but I will need a bit of time before I can listen to it again. And Julie writes, same for me. I'm a lawyer and I arrived at court wiping my eyes and fixing my makeup. Also, weirdly enough, I went to a museum today where one of the exhibits discussed a Mrs. Rasmussen. Never heard of the name before the Johnny Dollar episode. And then we go over to Spotify and Mandy Lou writes, this was such a touching episode. I've been listening for many years. Thank you, Adam, for all your hard work. And then Oki's mom writes simply, loved it. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate your comments. And really, it is rare for us to get that many comments right away spread across most of the platforms that we post the show on. Nothing on YouTube yet, but as of this recording, we haven't released on YouTube, which is a week behind, so I expect we'll be hearing from YouTube comments next week. That the episode has such an impact 70 years later may come in part from the fact that it's a bit unexpected. You don't expect that sort of story from a radio detective series. Of course, with its original air date, while it wasn't the Christmas episode, it was right before Christmas. And so something that was a bit different might have been considered in order. But oftentimes, if you hear those sort of episodes, they're either a bit fun, or just, you know, a little sweet and heartwarming. But this went really deep, and it really speaks to people's hearts and to their experiences. And we talked about when we played the Rasmussen Matter that the name John Dawson, which was on this script, is usually, during the serial era, it was a pseudonym for E. Jack Newman, who was a very talented Edgar-winning writer who wrote so many radio scripts and actually created multiple television series. But this one radio script might be the best thing that he ever did. So again, I appreciate the tremendous response to this episode and appreciate everyone's thoughts. Thank you so much. And I think just a great illustration of the power of radio storytelling. All right, well, now it's time to thank our Patreon supporter of the day. Thank you to Eliza, Patreon supporter since July of 2021, currently supporting the podcast at the Seamus level of $4 or more per month. Thank you so much for your support, Eliza, and that will actually do it for today. If you're enjoying the podcast, please follow us using your favorite podcast software, and if you're enjoying the podcast on YouTube, be sure to like the video, subscribe to the channel, and mark the notification bell. All those great things that help YouTube channels grow. We will be back next Friday with another episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, but join us back here tomorrow for Dragnet, where...
Okay, what's on your mind?
Gus Valentine.
Yeah, that's a tough one to lose.
You got any idea who killed him?
We're working on it.
How do you mean?
Just that.
Well, that makes us even. There's only one difference.
Yeah?
We get paid for it, you don't.
We thought a lot more of Gus than you did. Any law against striking down the killer?
The law against shooting him down.
Tell that to the boys who cut down Gus. I don't think you can get to him without us.
We've done it before.
You're a little late with Gus.
We tried to keep him alive. We warned him for a month. He knew what was coming. We talked to him.
Yeah, he told me. Funny guy. He had a mind of his own. He had a reason for not telling you.
What was it?
When we get there, we can ask him.
You think you know who did it?
Won't be too tough to find out. Meantime, you can work it from your end.
And if you get to him first?
Maybe we'll give you a call.
Now, you listen, Davis. I'll tell you the same thing we told Valentine. It's not open season for murder. This town's had all the shooting it's going to have. Valentine's killer's going to go to the gas chamber. That's the only way he's going to go. You understand?
I hope you'll be with us then. In the meantime, send your comments to box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter, Radio Detectives, and check us out on Instagram, instagram.com/greatdetectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.